In many whistleblowing cases, the highest stakes are for national security whistleblowing. It takes a great deal of fortitude to take on the power and the authority of the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, and in some cases, the White House itself. Oftentimes, the whistleblower pays with his career, and in some cases, even with his freedom. Today, we're going to look at the case of Stephen Friend, an FBI agent who recently blew the whistle on an increasingly politicized FBI. For his trouble, the 12-year FBI veteran and member of the FBI's Special Weapons and Tactics Team was stripped of his gun and badge, escorted out of the building, and fired. I'm John Kiriakou. You're watching The Whistleblowers. Let's start this story from the beginning. Stephen Friend made a complaint to the FBI Inspector General saying that the FBI's leadership has become increasingly politicized. He offered proof that the FBI's Washington, D.C. field office was exaggerating the threat of domestic terrorism, even calling parents who complained about educational curricula in their children's schools potential terrorists. He argued that many of the FBI's targets were having their civil rights and civil liberties violated. And even on the left, he pointed to the recent arrest of two protesters at an oil company who threw glitter and unfurled a banner at an oil company. Those two protesters were charged with terrorism, but the charge was later thrown out. In the specific incident that led to his whistleblowing, Stephen Friend was ordered to participate in a raid in Daytona Beach, Florida, where the FBI was going to arrest people who were alleged to have committed misdemeanors, just minor crimes. He told his leaders that this violated FBI regulations and constituted an illegal use of force. He said that he had taken an oath to uphold the Constitution and that he would not participate in an illegality. It was the end of his career. Our guest today is former FBI Special Agent, Chief Division Counsel, and famed whistleblower, Colleen Rowley. Colleen, more than almost anybody else, understands whistleblowing at the FBI. Colleen Rowley joined the FBI in 1981, just after finishing law school. After assignments in New York and abroad, she took up a position at the FBI field office in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where she became the chief division counsel and where she taught constitutional law to other FBI agents and to police officers. Following the attacks of September 11, 2001, Colleen Rowley wrote a paper for then-FBI Director Robert Mueller, saying that FBI personnel in the organization's headquarters in Washington, D.C. had mishandled information provided by the Minneapolis field office regarding Zacharias Moussaoui, a suspected terrorist who had been involved in preparations for a suicide attack similar to September 11th way back in 1994. She identified failures in the Moussaoui investigation that left the United States vulnerable on September 11th. In May 2002, Rowley was called to testify before Congress and before the 9/11 Commission about the FBI's pre-9/11 counterterrorism lapses. That testimony led to a major reorganization, including the creation of a new FBI Office of Intelligence and the hiring of a significant number of FBI agents with critical language skills. In 2002, Rowley was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year, along with two other whistleblowers. Colleen, welcome to the show. Let's begin with what must have gone through Stephen Friend's mind. His attorneys have told the media that this is not a partisan issue. Friend did not even vote for Donald Trump in the 2020 election. Instead, he had a genuine concern for protecting the civil rights and civil liberties of Americans. And he took his oath to the Constitution seriously. I believe that his calculations were similar to what you and I considered before blowing the whistle. What are your thoughts?
Well, if it's like myself and other whistleblowers, I think Friend probably did not come to a quick realization overnight, but that it was one thing after another. And actually, this also falls in the context of this longstanding Russiagate cover-up of Hunter Biden. So there were preceding events that had to probably influence his thinking. And then, of course, he sees a violation of the administrative and investigative guidelines for the FBI.
Why would the FBI fire Stephen Friend when he made a legitimate whistleblower disclosure just as he was trained to do? He didn't go to the media. He didn't even go to the congressional oversight committees. He went to the FBI's inspector general. So why punish him like that?
I think he originally went to his supervisor. So in fact, he went up the chain of command. And that's a sign of a legitimate, genuine, authentic whistleblower, that they try at the lowest levels. And then when they don't get answers, they go up the chain of command. And obviously the Department of Justice Inspector General would be the correct entity to evaluate this. I will say one thing about alleging a violation of the FBI's investigative and administrative guidelines. These are big, thick books that they show you at when you go through FBI training school. But of course, no one is able to get through those thick manuals. And of course, if you have a question, you can look up things, or you can ask your attorney in your office. But when I was working, it was almost a badge of honor to violate all of the rules. In fact, one of my assistant special agent in charge in New York City, he wrote a book bragging that you can't get anything done if you follow those rules. And actually, he says the New York way, of course, was to cut the corners and do the work without worrying about the rules. So Stephen Friend obviously was in the FBI. He knows that a lot of corners get cut. And of course, he's alleging that there was a violation in this case. And we'll have to see if the inspector general evaluates it that way.
Compare this to your own case, Colleen, or to the cases of other FBI whistleblowers like Jane Turner or Fred Whitehurst. Was there something that Stephen Friend should have done differently, do you think?
I think he did it the right way, and he does have, you know, many signs of being genuine. As I said, this isn't a standalone item. You have to take into context the prior, the way the FBI was politicized after Trump's election. And, you know, the fact is they lied to the FISA court about that Chris Steele dossier, which has been completely debunked. So, of course, he's using his mind to put what he now sees happening after the January 6th, where they're making it look like it's a nationwide problem. By the way, this is exactly what happened with 9/11, if you remember. The 9/11 was a one incident, well, two if you count the Pentagon, but it still was basically one incident in New York City, Washington, D.C., and the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. But what happened after 9/11? The FBI made it seem like it was a nationwide program by putting a lot of incentives and pressures on the field offices to come up with these cases. I mean, a lot of it was really kind of almost bordering, if not actual entrapment, to make it look like terrorism, Al-Qaeda terrorism, was a nationwide program and a nationwide problem. And that's exactly what Agent Friend is alleging here, is that by farming out the cases, but still controlling it from a politicized Washington, D.C. bureau, that it was making it look like it was a national domestic terrorism, right-wing domestic terrorism was nationwide problem, when in fact it was confined to one date, January 6th, and in one place, Washington, D.C. Basically, I would say that the way the FBI handled the January 6th riot is exactly the same way that they handled the 9/11. And they exaggerated and amplified it for political reasons, of course, because it was considered to be the favorite program of the day. And so they amplified it. It served all their careers. And it is coming from Washington, because in Washington, that's the heart of where the politicization takes place, not so much in the field.
Colleen, what does this case say about the progress or the lack of progress that national security whistleblowers have made in the last 15 years or so?
Well, I think there were a couple of additions, maybe tweaks to the law. I noticed that Steve Friend claimed that he made a protected disclosure to his supervisor, his immediate supervisor. And I know that the prior law, the prior administrative regulations did not allow a whistleblower to make a protected disclosure to their supervisor. You had to go basically to the special agent in charge or to the Office of Professional Affairs, you know, the Inspector General, And it wasn't, if you just said something to your supervisor, it was not considered a protected disclosure. So I think some things have been changed slightly, but overall not. Steve Friend was suspended fairly immediately. And the FBI looks like they didn't take much of his concerns seriously. Now, again, it remains to be seen if a more objective inspector general will do that. It's possible. Obviously, the Department of Justice Inspector General did find that the FBI violated a lot of rules and law in going to the making those false claims to the FISA court. So it would, you would hope that maybe the inspector general would come to the other conclusion, but the FBI suspended him immediately, and it doesn't look like they gave any credence at all to his disclosure.
All right, Colleen, stay right there. You're watching The Whistleblowers. We're going to take a short break and then return to our conversation with FBI whistleblower Colleen Riley. Stay tuned.
Волынь – это особая территория на Украине, территория, все время находящаяся так или иначе под контролем противоборствующих сил. К 1939 году поляки составляли примерно 15-20% населения Волыни.
Когда был атак на Союз Советский, в том же атаку również brali już dwa bataliony ukraińskich nacjonalistów.
Mordy masowe, podczas których niszczono całe wsie wołyńskie, rozpoczęły się w lutym 1943 roku.
Они верили в то, что таким образом они движутся к созданию украинского государства независимого, моноэтничного, такого, какое они хотели видеть.
Українських націоналістів, тобто власне донців опублікував, там же не завагавши доконати жодної зброї на своїм противнику, якщо того хоче вимагав добру України. І це то є огромна просьба своєї життєвісті мати.
Русофобия оказалась выгодным бизнесом.
Они Украину предали, ограбили и отдали на растерзание американцам. Украину, мою родину.
Эти люди готовились достаточно открыто, финансирование проводилось достаточно широко, и мы знаем всех акторов, кто это финансирование получал.
8 лет двигались ровно в этом направлении, чтобы вот расчеловечить русских и разорвать всякие все связи.
Это результат серьезной работы над историческим сознанием.
Преступление против человечества задокументированных на украинских территориях очень много. И большая часть из них совершена при попустительстве или по прямому приказу нынешнего или прошлого киевского руководства.
Уже они давно вышли из легального поля, давно, значит, действуют другими методами, неконституционными.
Это и есть преступление по нацистскому образцу.
Only 41% of U.S. adults have enough savings to cover a $1,000 emergency.
We have record numbers of Americans who are on the verge of having their cars repossessed.
More than 137 million Americans are facing financial hardship because of medical debt.
In America, we do have a welfare system in place to help people who are struggling financially, but it's a conditional system. You have to prove to the government that you truly need help.
The simplest way that I can explain a basic income is that it's like Social Security for the rest of us. A basic income would be a monthly payment that would go to everyone.
That's $1,000 a month, no strings attached. I can use it however I would like. That means, I don't know, I just won't go crazy.
The reason that I am a fan of guaranteed income, because it is this idea that everybody is deserving just by virtue of your being here.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. We're speaking with FBI whistleblower Colleen Rowley about the case of FBI agent Stephen Friend, who complained about the politicization of the FBI and the FBI's lack of respect for American civil rights and civil liberties. Colleen, let's drill down a little into what Stephen Friend has revealed. He said that he was a member of the FBI squad that investigated and targeted pedophiles and sex traffickers, but he was taken off that assignment and made to investigate people who had participated in the protest at the Capitol building on January 6, 2021. I'm not talking about rioters, necessarily. He was told to investigate people who had participated peacefully. He told his supervisor on two separate occasions that he had a moral and ethical problem with this. He believed that the FBI was violating demonstrators' Sixth and Eighth Amendment rights. He told them that his previous work against pedophiles and sex traffickers was more important, and so he was fired. Is there a broader message here? What do you think this action says to the rest of the FBI's workforce?
Well, I don't know. We only know what the news reports. There are some news reports that a larger segment of the FBI workforce is basically in agreement that when something happens, there is a knee-jerk tendency in the FBI to put all the resources on that issue. Again, the same thing happened with 9/11. After 9/11 and during the anthrax attacks, there were virtually no agents that were allowed to work healthcare fraud. And white collar crime and all of the other crime programs, the FBI investigates over 300 some different criminal statutes, federal criminal statutes. Many of them, you know, like investigating child predators, are very important. And what happens is after some event like this, because Washington, D.C. is politicized and, it, you know, for partisan purposes, there's always this push-pull going on between the two parties. And it looks like the FBI gets caught in it. And in many cases, they seem to take sides, especially since Trump's election. They seem, and they've sided with the Democratic Party and accepting the Steele dossier as gospel truth, et cetera. So I think Steve Friend has a point here, which is that you can't allow this knee-jerk reaction to take place when there's an event, any event at all. You have to keep, certainly devote enough resources to investigate that event. But in the case of protest, this has always been a problem. They can't separate people's and uphold people's First Amendment rights to peacefully, criticize. They assume that if you're criticizing something that you must be on the terrorist side, engaging in violence. There's a line between terrorism where you actually do engage in violence and basically just, criticizing peacefully, protesting outside, et cetera. And it's always been difficult for the FBI to understand that line. And especially in Washington, they say, well, go get everyone and we'll sort it out later. And I think that's exactly what happened with the January 6th, basically the same way as happened after 9/11 with the Islamophobia and going after, claiming that there were all these sleeper cells when there wasn't. It really, the parallels are very great between the two events here. It's just that they're on slightly different partisan sides, but it's the same reaction, the same knee-jerk reaction.
The U.S. government has a whistleblower protection law, but national security whistleblowers are notoriously exempt from its protections. When a national security whistleblower decides to report on evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality, he or she quite literally jeopardizes his career. Stephen Friend knew what he was doing. He was willing to take that risk. Now that his information is public and he's lost his job, what advice would you give him?
Well, I guess the main advice is to try to hold on to the things that are most near and dear to yourself. Obviously, I think he has a family, and that's important. I think his wife has actually been punished. His wife has nothing to do with the FBI, but she lost her social media accounts because, again, you talk about an overreaction, a knee-jerk overreaction. This seems to be it. So he's going to have to hold on to the things closest to him. Hopefully he can get some financial support, at least in the short term, until his case can be adjudicated. And hopefully he can get some support from the public, at least to put some pressure on for a quicker adjudication of this by the Inspector General, so that it doesn't run, you know, for a year or two when he's in limbo this entire time. Maybe he can. I don't know if you're suspended without pay, if he's able to get a second job, maybe he's able to support himself. I would think that they'd have to let him be able to support himself some way. And basically just keep his, you know, eyes on the truth here and be able to stick to his guns. There are other whistleblowers who do succumb to the pressure. And many of them do fall apart because it's just such a scary proposition to have everyone seem to be turning against you. If there are other agents that have witnessed similar problems, this would also be the time for them to come forward to the Inspector General and tell the Inspector General what they know. In my case about 9/11, there were many other agents that actually did support the notion that the FBI was covering up the truth of 9/11 and that there were ways to have prevented it, et cetera. And there were procedures that were causing obstacles, the FISA wall, all of these things that were obstacles. And there were a lot of agents. A lot of people are afraid to speak out, but I think there were some that actually saved me because I think they did tell the truth about that situation.
What can the rest of us do to help Stephen Friend or to help and encourage others considering becoming whistleblowers? It's a long and difficult road. What advice would you give them to make the experience a little bit easier?
Well, you know, that's a $64 million question. I don't know that you can make it easier. If you're Edward Snowden, look at him sacrificing his country, his citizenship in some ways, and being, pilloried, largely pilloried. You got to develop thick skin, really thick skin, and you have to understand who your true friends are. And I think in terms of issues, it might be that whistleblowers see issues more important as this kind of group loyalty. You know, a lot of people are succumb to group loyalty because it's very painful to have your friends and family turned against you. But there are other people who basically say, this issue is that important. And they try, I will say to Steve Friend, eventually a lot of people will recognize when you're right. They won't necessarily tell you that, but there will be that over the years. Daniel Ellsberg is a great example, that people recognize that he was right, that Pentagon papers show that the Vietnam War should never have been started in the first place. So even though at the time, people and friends turned against him, he was proven correct. And I think you have to have your eye on that long-term goal.
That's all we have for you today. We'd like to thank our guest, FBI whistleblower Colleen Rowley. I'm John Kiriakou, and this has been The Whistleblowers. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.